you're choosing Girl Scouts over burlesque dancers. You know.
Yes, there's something. Well, if you put it that way, it sounds creepy.
Welcome once again to Crazy Comics and Stories. It's me, your charming and delightful old Uncle Rat Bastard. And at the other end of the series of tubes and wires we call the interwebs is Joe Crazy Rider. How you doing today, Joe?
Tits.
Excuse me?
Oh, that's what we used to say in high school when you were feeling good. Tits. Women didn't like it that much, but the guys did.
God. How did you ever get married?
I don't know. She said she liked me.
Okay. So it's been a busy year already.
It has?
Yes. We're going to start with...
No. Oh, you know, I hate it when we start.
Sad news, everyone. Sad news. a comic institution that's, let me do some math here.
30.
Carry the 30. 4. 42.
Oh. Yes, the answer to life, universe, and everything.
And the number of years the Comics Buyer's Guide was in print.
Mm-hmm.
Started in 1971 and ended in 2013. The Krause Publications has announced that issue 1699, which has already shipped, will be the last issue of the Comic Buyer's Guide. Mm-hmm. And it's one of those things where, to be honest, when I heard that the Comic Buyer's Guide was ending, I said, they still print that?
I think, are they ending the online too?
Yes.
Oh.
Which, you know, really, do you need the online? The magazine was all, I think what, the internet killed the magazine in two ways. First off, it used to be a newspaper.
Mm, a weekly newspaper.
And it had press releases, which you couldn't get anywhere else. Because, let's face it, oh, it's a comic book press release. Well, who's going to publish it? Well, the Comic Buyer's Guide and no one.
Yeah.
And it had ads. So if you wanted to sell your old comics, you wanted to buy old comics, that's where the ads were. This was before eBay, before the internet. I can't tell you how many back issues and other things that I bought through Comic Buyer's Guide in the 80s and early 90s. If your local comic shop didn't have it, or the comic shop was too far away and you were getting everything through the mail, you'd get your stuff through Comic Buyer's Guide. I'd also go there to see, oh, my comic shop has this for $20, and this guy has them for $5. I'll buy it from him.
Even with shipping, it was cheaper sometimes.
Yeah.
I do recall my first guide I picked up, and I think I got it free. I don't recall. It was just something somebody was giving away, and I thought, oh, cool, I got to hang on to it. And the week it comes out. And I don't believe I ran across another one. Eventually, this had to be sometime in the 80s, I subscribed to it. And I kept the subscription going, and I loved it when it came in the mail. It was kind of like a weekly ritual, just like going to the comic store, you know. Peter David started a column. Bob Ingersoll had his... The Law Is an Ass column, which was just brilliant, you know, where he talked about the legal fluff and stuff that the comic book industry would push as real law and whether or not it was actual real law or just bullshit comic book law. Tony Isabella. I remember Fred Hembeck was in there. Who's the guy from Mile High Comics? I can't even think of his name. He had a guy.
Yeah.
He had a column in there briefly. Looking at the ads was fun. They had cartoons. It was always interesting watching Don Thompson, because when he did the reviews, he would do good and bad reviews. And he would always say things like, "You guys are lucky. My wife's not doing reviews. She's a lot harder than me." Well, then when he passed away, unfortunately, she took over the reviews, but she only did good reviews because she was from the old school of, well, if I have nothing nice to say about it, I ain't going to say nothing. The only time I stopped Buyer's Guide was when I opened up Hot Comics. One of the first things I did was to call Krause, and I had them send me Comic Buyer's Guide. I did 10 copies. Toy Shop, which was a companion piece that did somewhat the same thing with toys. Not as many articles, but definitely way, way, way more in toys. I mean, you didn't need the internet or eBay. You had, I think it was Toy Shop was the, if I'm remembering, because they merged that from a monthly magazine. It used to be a weekly newspaper. And then there was another monthly, like Toy Collector, I think was the name of it. And eventually they mashed the two together. But like you said, the internet destroyed them. I think I brought in copies of Antique Collector or maybe Record Shop Collector or something, because it was all returnable. Every month, Corey would come in when you started hanging at the shop. You'd rip the covers off, just the mastheads that said Comic Buyer's Guide. And then later on, I found out we didn't even need that. We just needed the date piece, and we'd mail it back for credit against what was coming new. And I would always annoy, I don't know if I annoyed them, but I would do it in 3 month spurts because I always left the buyer's guide piled up on the counter for people to buy. And what was cool about it was I could read it and then, of course, send it back. So years, and I didn't resubscribe until I finally, when I sold Hot Comics. And I don't recall if by that time they had gone to a magazine format. I think they had. And I've kept the magazine format. I actually was going to do, when I had Crazy Comics, do the same thing, just get them in. But by that time, they bought it so that they changed it. So you, it wasn't a weekly newspaper where you returned it for credit like you do normal magazines. It was you buy it, you keep it. And I was like, well, I could do that through Diamond and have one less account to deal with. So I would buy, usually I'd buy like 2-3 copies, keep one. One would sell. Sometimes one would be left over on the shelf, you know. And then after Crazy Comics, I went back to subscribing, and it just expired like 2 months ago. So my collection is 2 issues short.
And it, oh, no.
You know what's funny, though? In some ways, I thought I shouldn't do it, but, I mean, because it was a newspaper, the Comic Buyer's Guides that I had – they do what all newspapers do. They turn brittle. They turn brown. They're hard to keep. The ink runs off. You know, I toyed with keeping them, but eventually they just went to the recycle bin. The magazines I still have, they're all over the place, and I imagine I'll line them up. Because what I'd like to do with them, I have a copy of Comic Buyer's Guide here. One of my favorite parts of the Buyer's Guide are the actual reviews. I mean, Isabella does Tony's tips where he talks about the books he likes and ones he doesn't like. They have an independent comic review. They had a trade paperback review. And a lot of times I'd read through these things and think, oh, well, those sound kind of interesting. Maybe I should check that out. And like here, I'm just looking and they talk about the Stan Lee universe, which was a soft cover or hardcover from Tomorrow's publication. And this is from the April 2012 edition of Comic Buyer's Guide. And I'm thinking that would be a cool book to buy. Unless I happen to see the book in front of me, I'll never remember that. So when I'm looking for something to check out, I might just browse through an old buyer's guide and find all these things that I passed up the first time around or didn't get. And maybe, you know, go on eBay or, you know, go to, where do you go? Discount Comic Book Service. They always have a bunch of stuff ready to go. They have their order service and then, of course, their graphic novels. or I'd find things to buy.
I also use Tales of Wonder and Things from Another World. Tales of Wonder has a lot of sales, and Things of Another from Another World is somehow connected to Dark Horse. So I don't know what the connection is, other than they're both in the same city, but they seem to be connected somehow. When I first started reading the Comic Buyer's Guide, it was the first thing, oh, there's a newspaper telling you what's coming up in comics. And they had columns, and I enjoyed the columns. You talked about Tony Isabella's column. His was really interesting in that he bought a comic shop, and his column, weekly column, was about the comic shop. And then he just sort of switched to talking about other things. He never said that, oh, yeah, the comic shop failed and I sold it or closed it. We don't know which. But it went from about running a comic shop to back to the stuff he was interested in. Mark Evanier's News from Me started there. And I guess he left over a pay dispute. Even though he was donating his pay, he found out he was the least paid columnist.
But he wrote and said, most.
And he said, well, if you don't at least raise my pay to what everybody else gets, I'm going to leave. Oh, well, you're just giving it away anyway. Okay, I'm gone. But what I found fascinating in those old buyer's guides, it's almost like an early version of an internet message board. Their letters page would go on and on and on, and there would be arguments that would last for weeks and months. And you'd get letters from comic book professionals, longtime fans, people who were just around. The story that I think is most famous about the Comic Buyer's Guide letters page was back in the early 90s, they got a letter from a man called Name Withheld, who went on and on and on about how, well, artists don't need writers. Writers are a burden. We artists can do stories better anyway. If you want to become a comic book writer, just get into editorial, because editorial writes all the comics. Comic book writers and editors are holding the medium and the industry back. And there was a lot of back and forth on it. Comic book writers saying, look, if artists could write well, editors would let them write their own books. The problem is a lot of artists just draw what they want to draw, and the stories don't make a lot of sense. And eventually we found out that Name Withheld was, Joe, do you remember?
It's Eric Larson.
That's right.
Savage Dragon Buddy.
And John Byrne chimed in. This was one of the first indications of just how big an ass clown John Byrne was. Just every week there'd be a new letter from him railing against this, and how this Name Withheld doesn't know anything, and he's probably a terrible artist. And on and on and on. And Eric Larson and Peter David and John Byrne have all hated each other ever since.
Can't we all just get along?
But that was pre-Image. Mm-hmm. So then when Image started up, and we don't need editors, we don't need writers. Ah!
Yeah, they proved that wrong, didn't they?
Well, the funny thing was McFarlane brought in a bunch of high-name writers. Jim Lee learned very quickly he needed writers because he hated scripting. So I forget who he brought in at the beginning. Then he brought in Chris Claremont. Then he brought in Alan Moore. And now Image is one of the best comic publishers around, with some great books, really high sales. Back then they had high sales on really shitty books. You want proof? Go back, read those early issues of Wildcats. I dare you.
Or my favorite.
I dare you.
Death Moon.
He's going to be out. He's going to be out.
Oh, I got some stuff I'm good.
By the time the buyer's guide went to the magazine format, I I'd completely ignored it for a few years because all their news stories were weeks and months old. You had the internet, which would print the press releases the day they came out. You'd have to wait 2 to 3 weeks for it to be in the buyer's guide. The letters page had dwindled to about nothing. Most of the columnists were online, so you could read their columns online. And the ads didn't matter anymore because you had eBay.
Very true.
I picked up a few issues. Go ahead.
Oh, no, no. You keep fading in and out. I lost what you said.
Oh.
But I was going to say, even the, you know, even like the one I'm looking at where they just covered a half century of Spider-Man, and this was back in April, you know, and they tended to get more relevant where they would get stuff right before it happened. But, you know, we had had, what, 15 years of Wizard, which was a high glossy, pretty free stuff giveaway type magazine, and it failed. I'm surprised Buyer's Guide went as long as it did.
Well, it had a much lower overhead.
When it first started, it was a big square-bound issue, and now even now, it's just it's kind of almost as thin as Newsweek was.
Yeah. Well, when they switched to the magazine format, I remember them saying, we will have the same number of pages as we would have as we had with four issues of the newspaper. So those early issues are nice, big, thick chunks with a lot of stuff in them.
Well, even the price guide was interesting because they would cover runs of comics. And then the bottom, they would also have different comic runs. So, you know, you would read through the price guide, even if you weren't looking at prices. You know?
And they would review books in the price guide. Along the top and the bottom, it would be, oh, we're going to review the first 50 issues of The Punisher. Issue 1, 3 stars. Mm-hmm. Issue 2, 4 stars. Issue 3.
No stars.
Yeah.
It was a fill-in issue. You know, that could be why, and this could be a case of where we might be clairvoyant. Remember my freak from last week? I could not find a comic buyer's guide price list and checklist beyond 2010. This all could be part of that because,
yeah,
you know, to me it was one of the best collector's guide you could have. Here's a list of everything in front of you that has every single issue listed, whether it's a variant or not. Unlike Overstreet, which will tend to say, well, you know, issues 200 through 500 are all worth a quarter. Nothing there. You know, it doesn't help me. You know, this one would actually break it down and, you know, notate crossovers and notable artists and, you know, whatever. Plus, it was a godsend when you're trying to, you know, check things off. You can still get that by going to Comic Base. That's the best one I've ever seen. I haven't seen anybody else that's near as thorough. Through Comic Base, you can connect to Atomic Avenue if you want to buy or sell comics, which, again, is a great place other than eBay to go buy and sell comics. You can even set up your Comic Base program so that, okay, I want to not only track what I have personally in my collection, but I want to also track what I'm selling. And if I sell something out of my collection, it'll immediately make a hole. Con time comes around, you can say, okay, give me all the issues I'm listing of these titles, you know. It's a really, really cool program. You can even download a freebie copy to try. But, you know, I'm an old fart. I wanted a book to do that with. I didn't want, you know, a computer program. When I'm digging on my knees through quarter bins, I'll flip through my book and figure out what I need, you know, to have a laptop or even an iPad down there. I don't know. It seems strange and unusual. There's an app for that.
Well, let's see. Buyer's Guide is gone.
CBG.
Wizard's gone. Comics Journal's gone.
Yeah, yeah. It was always funny because there's always to me, it was a low-grade feud between Journal and Buyer's Guide because Buyer's Guide, like you said, would just run press releases and Journal would get more down into the nitty gritty. I mean, like when a company like Defiant would pop up and then disappear, Journal would get a really in-depth article saying why they went under and what happened, whether it was pretty or dirty or just sales, you know. So I always look forward to, you know, like, I mean, we talk about was it Triumphant was a company that rose in the 90s, and where they used to have a thing where every issue, you know, you have.
Oh, yeah, every issue was numbered.
Every issue of theirs was numbered, you know. How rare is this number 5,652? Well, about as rare as issue 10. There's only one of them. But they, you know, eventually they would go under, and then Comics Journal would have a good article about what happened. So to me, they both served a useful purpose. I didn't need one beefing at the other. You know, Buyer's Guide, yeah. Press releases, current things. Journal did some actual news, some wonderful interviews. Now they're gone.
Well, with the Journal, a lot of their news really fell apart in the mid-90s. For some reason, they just quit digging into stuff. And then once you had all these comic book podcasts.
Like us.
Well, let's see. I can read an interview with somebody, or I can listen to an interview with someone that has twice as much information for free.
Mm-hmm.
Huh. Well, me being a cheap bastard, I'd rather listen to the person talk than read it. The other, there's actually an origin to the feud between the Comics Journal and Comic Buyer's Guide.
Ooh, story time.
Because, well, the first, remember how you'd pick up the Journal and they'd have back issues and they'd only go to like, I think it was like 47 or something like that? Because before that, they were an ad newspaper as well.
Ah.
So, Gary Groth was brought in, and he sort of changed the focus to more literary criticism with some ads. But there was always the sniping back and forth before that change, and it probably continued. There was also Gary Groth was, you know, comics need to be better. Comics need to be aimed at adults. Comics shouldn't be all superheroes. And Comic Buyer's Guide was more, wee! Comics.
And then, boy, if you think that was bad, that was like when Wizard showed up, they were like hepped up on acid. I mean, they were just high gloss and pretty colors and freebie half issues and gold.
And everything you buy is going to be worth a bajillion dollars.
Bajillions of dollars. Even that.
I worked at Shinders when Wizard came out.
Gold.
And people would go through whatever Wizard said was going to be a hot book. It was like locusts came through.
You got the
boom! All of a sudden, look!
Crack that baby open and look at the top.
Sold out.
And if you happen whatever. To have it still on shelf, slap that baby up as a back issue, because you know. And then the other thing that there were two things that drove me crazy, both about Comic Buyer's Guide and Wizard. And they both had to do with their. Price guides. You know, there were three books you used if you were doing back issues. Wizard, Comic Buyer's Guide, when they used to have a guide in the back. Overstreet had an update, and then there was also a monthly Comic Shop Values, which lasted a while and then kind of disappeared. Because what you would do is Comic Buyer's Guide and Overstreet were always, yeah, Mutants 98 is only worth $5. And you're like, wait a minute. I just sold them for $20 a piece. They were always so conservative. And then their whole snide attitude was like, well, eventually the price would go down. They'd be, see, we told you it was only worth $5. No, I want to know what it's going for now. You know, again, remember, we didn't have eBay. You didn't have the online stuff. Everything was just the way it was. You were either on top of this stuff, or you just kind of found out about it after the fact. Or you waited for Wizard to come out and tell you it was worth $40. I can't tell you the number of times I had some of the old school dealers calling me. And these are guys who had shops, and they're like, you know, I just sold a Valiant and Solar 10 for $20. Is that a good price? And I'm like, well, you know, Wizard's got it at 40. Oh, I lost $20. No.
No, you didn't.
What did you buy it for? You probably bought it for half a cover, which would have been $1.25. You know, that was the old school attitude, was I didn't sell it for what it was worth. I sold it for less and I lost money. You know, and I never really did that with my shop. I mean, again, if I picked up the Wizard and I saw, oh, wow, they're saying this book is now worth $20 because I had the first appearance of the Deathmate Strangler. I gotta stop doing that. You know, if I had
trying to lose weight?
I think the only time I ever picked a book off the shelf.
There's your New Year's resolution.
What's that?
Deathmate bulimia.
Oh. I still got all the gold issues downstairs. I think the last issue.
You got them for a quarter each, didn't you?
I actually. Probably. I don't remember. I remember picking up a set, selling it on eBay for $50, and then buying another set. I keep saying one of these days I'm going to read it, but I got to remember not to do it on a full stomach.
I've tried. We had a listener wrote in and said that they were able to make it through. I don't know how, because I swear to God, the Rob Liefeld one, they just took pages, threw them in the air, and put them in random order.
You know, I think the last issue I can remember that Wizard came up with where I actually had it on the shelf and pulled it off was the Razor special that had the first appearance of She on it. Because
okay,
She was big, but nobody realized that she had appeared in that Razor first. And I looked on the shelf and I happened to find one. It was okay shape, so we marked it to $10. And people would always be like, oh my God, how do you have it at $10? It's worth $30 in Wizard. I want $10 for it. You gonna buy it for $10? No. It's not worth 30, is it? Worth 10.
And now neither character is in print.
Yeah. Odd.
Not really. It's hot. Hot book.
Hot, very hot. Well, I could tell you what I just won off of eBay.
What did you win off of eBay? Your soul?
No, I'm going to sell that. But
Punch and Pie?
I won Knights of the Dinner Table number 2.
Ooh.
Won it for a mere $24.99.
That's not horrible.
It's actually, no, it guides at about $50 if you're, you know, look at a regular price guide or so. The number 1 is probably the only legit hard one. And I know I've gone as high as $200 for it and never won it. But I think my issues actually start at about 15 and go to date. I actually at one time had a number 1, 2, and 4, and I picked them up at one of Greg Ketter's Dreamhaven shops, one above the drugstore in Dinkytown, and held on to them. And then, you know, when I had Hot Comics, I think I ended up selling them. I must have. I don't have them anymore. The other thing I picked up, and this will lead into our next segment, I picked up one of the many variants of Amazing Spider-Man 700. This was the one that is the Christmas variant that I kind of liked. It has a bunch of people snowing outside. You're looking into the store, or maybe it's a Daily Bugle. I don't know. Everybody's celebrating Christmas, except Aunt May, who's looking out the window concerned because Peter's not there. And I believe in the background you see Peter fighting against some Bobo on a goblin thing. Even though he had nothing to do with Spider-Man 700, it was still there. And that was one of the few variants I didn't get at my local store.
Now, here's something I find interesting. You got Spider-Man 700 coming out. And you have tons of people who are saying, that's it, I'm done, I'm never buying Spider-Man again. F this, Dan Slott has ruined the character. And I've noticed that a lot of those people are the same people who, I won't buy Spider-Man since One More Day, it's all horrible and terrible, and Spider-Man whatever. And yet, what is it, the Superior Spider-Man? Mm-hmm. Best-selling comic of the month.
Yeah. We won't talk about Superior Spider-Man yet, because I know you haven't read it, Corey. But I was curious what you thought of Amazing Spider-Man 700. We actually mentioned it in the last podcast, but we never actually got around to talking about it. And I figured by now, if you don't know about it, we're not throwing the Spider-Man. Well, that sucked.
First thing I'll say is the J.M. DeMatteis backup story. Best Spider-Man story in the last however long.
Oh, which one was that?
An older Spider-Man An older Peter Parker is talking to his great-grandson.
Ah, okay, I remember there.
Oh, that was so good.
Did it really have
to... Why can't they just tell J.M. DeMatteis, look, here's a Spider-Man book. Just do it. Run. Go. Just write Spider-Man for the rest of your life. He has done so many great stories. Every Spider-Man story he's done that he's been in charge of has been really, really good. The only ones of his I didn't like were the Clone Saga. And he's talked about how, well, I was told what to do. And I didn't like doing that, so I left. The actual main story, I know that people are upset and throwing fits and crying and the gnashing of teeth and the fanboy rage and rending their garments. It's a story. It'll last for a while. I already am pretty sure I know how Peter Parker comes back. Just let the story play out. I like the idea of the villain has taken over the hero's body. And the influence of being in that body and having those memories may make him a hero. I think that's a fun idea. I'd like to see them explore it for a while. Joe?
I kind of like... I mean, I think all the way back when the Clone Saga started, and I remember saying, you know, this is a good idea. This could really work out interesting, especially when you have this new Spider-Man / Parker running around, coming up against... you know, villains that he's never seen before. I mean, the whole interplay between Ben Reilly when he started fighting Venom, and he could not believe that Parker had some type of detente with Venom where they didn't get in each other's business. I mean, he was just aghast because Venom was so evil, you know, before they tried to make him a quasi-hero. And this is the original Venom, not the Flash Thompson Venom now, but... And then you said something that I always think about every time they do a massive change. Yeah, well, if they don't screw it up. And it proved to be prophetic because they did screw it up, you know. And
it lasted forever.
And it really, it could have lasted to this day. And it's the same thing when they came around with the Spider-Man revealed his identity. Although now, you know, when we finally realize it wasn't ever meant to be permanent. But, I just thought there were more stories that could have been done before they decided to pull that crap called One More Day out of their behinds. And I'm kind of the same way now. I mean, it's the same thing when I hear about movies, you know. It's, I listen to people complain, oh, my God, Mr. Mom is Batman? Yeah, and he was a damn good one considering what came next. It's a story. I want to see where they go with it. I don't know how much I'm going to enjoy. How long can you stretch out the fact that he's, you know, leching after Mary Jane, or that, you know, he's now fighting against probably the same people that he was once allied with? How long is it going to be until someone's going to go, you know, something's not quite right with Peter. Something's changed. And being in this age of, mind swipes and clones and evil duplicates, you would think if Spider-Man actually stays on the Avengers, and I could see him dropping almost immediately, you would think somebody's going to notice something right away. Because even amongst friends, you know, I can tell over the phone, you know, if something's wrong with Corey, you know, like if you have a cold or you're feeling down or something, you hear it in your tone. You know that with people you're close with. People that are close to Peter Parker should notice right away, hey, there's something not quite right here. You know,
well,
and
we'll
the more,
see in the coming
yeah,
months.
I mean, it's going to be exciting to see what they do with it. And I'm curious. And of course, I know it's not permanent because by the time the second movie comes around, he'll probably be back to being Peter Parker, maybe.
Well, remember when the Captain America movie came out? Oh, look, Steve Rogers is back in the costume.
Yeah.
When the Thor movie came out, look, can I mention Thor's alive again.
Can I mention something about the Amazing Spider-Man movie?
Yes.
Didn't like it.
Really?
Finally saw it. It's one of those movies, I think maybe had I seen it in a theater, I would have been just awed by the hyperkinetic swinging around in the fight scenes. But I had to think, you know, why didn't I like this one as much as the others? I think it was probably one of two things, or probably both. First of all, we had two deaths. I don't think we needed two deaths in the movie. Yes, Ben Parker's got to die. That's just part of the origin story.
But I thought he must die.
It's just the way it is. He's not Spider-Man unless Gwen dies. That's the second issue. I'm already ahead of myself. With killing off Captain Stacy so quick, yeah, it was heroic. Yeah, he did it, blah, blah, blah. I didn't like it. I just thought, you know, it would have been more fun to have him go into the next movie. It would have been interesting. Yeah, he knows he's Parker. Now, how's he going to do it? He just spent the entire season, you know, putting up wanted posters for Spider-Man. Now, how is he going to go against that? But it would have been, I don't know, it's just two deaths, one movie, one character you're almost built to care about. The other character, he just seemed like a throwaway. Oh, here, you got to care for him because he's Gwen's father. Oh, he's dead. Who cares? And then, I mean, seriously, this was a guy. He was an asshole. He was against Spider-Man, and he was for Spider-Man, and he died. It was like too much, too soon. Should have dragged it into the next one and saved the death of Gwen for the third movie. Again, I don't know if it's going to happen, but, you know, the internet rumors, and again, I'm being a bitchy fanboy, just like we've been complaining about briefly. But really, not, do you have to kill off Gwen in the second movie? You know, like everybody's carping about. We haven't even met Osborn yet, you know? I don't know if they have this thing where they feel they have to hotshot this stuff, but, you know, again, it's only a movie. You know, you got to jam this stuff in 2 hours, and then we got 2 or 3 years for the next one. Maybe I'm thinking this might be more fun as a TV show where you can, you know, spread it out over time. Or maybe I'm just bitchy because I haven't seen a zombie get hacked off since Walking Dead's not on. Three reasons. You decide. Didn't like it.
Well, are we ready for freaking and geeking?
I suppose. That kind of what I just did was a freaking, so before we do that, should we mention our sponsor?
Why, yes. I have a pre-recorded bit on our sponsor. Ooh. Crazy Comics and Stories is looking for feedback from you. That's right, you. The person listening right now. Our beloved listeners. You can contact us via email at corey.strode@gmail.com. Our Facebook page is Crazy Comics and Stuff, because somehow Joe doesn't know that the name of the show is Crazy Comics and Stories. And you can actually leave us a voice message at our voice message line. And that number is 952-856-0519. If you leave a message, we will play it on the air unless you tell us not to. If you tell us not to, well, we won't play it on the air. But we'll listen to it ourselves and giggle. If you want to let people know about the show, there are all sorts of ways you can help. You can tell your friends and other people you know who might like us. If you don't like the show, you can tell people you don't like us. It's a real mean thing to do. You could give us a review on iTunes. Somehow that moves us up in the rankings. We don't understand how. It just does. And if you have a podcast, you can tell people about us. Then if you tell us you did it, we'll tell people about your podcast. We might even listen to it. If you'd like to sponsor the show or a segment of the show, you can do that. We'd be damn happy to help with that. Just contact us at corey.strode@gmail.com. Subject, advertising.
Ooh, you've been
there
busy.
It was. Yep, there you go.
Sweet. And you know, of course.
And it had all our contact information and asking people to recommend us on iTunes. We have one recommendation on iTunes from Superfan.
That was probably that might have been my mom.
No, we have a Superfan.
Cool. Always wanted one of those.
Brian Poindexter gave us a 5-star review. He really likes us.
Cool.
And if you really like us, go to iTunes and give us a review. They say it increases our metrics. I didn't even know we had metrics. Now, I remember learning metrics when I was in grade school, but then all the teachers, for some reason, were, metrics is bad and wrong, and we won't use it. Well, except in science.
Is it metrics or matrix?
Metrics.
Oh, okay, so I can put the blue pill back. I had two. We already talked about the Comic Buyer's Guide dying, because I did look forward to getting the magazine. The Amazing Spider-Man movie I already quetched about. The last thing I'm freaking about is that I will not be around to see the debut of Spider-Man.
Which debut of Spider-Man?
Well, the Spider-Man monster truck at the Advance Auto Parts Monster Jam in Minneapolis at the Metrodome January 19th. We already know Grave Digger's going to be there, but this was going to be the Minneapolis debut of the Spider-Man monster truck. Funny. I am being sent away again. Only for 4 days.
Only 4 days?
Yeah, I'm part of the 600-plus complement going to help out with the inauguration.
So do you get to go see the inauguration?
So, Corey, I have no idea. I don't know where I'll be. I'll either be on the mall, probably not in the golden ticket section, probably back by Lincoln. But it's up to you to go to the Advance Auto Parts Monster Jam. Go to your local Subway, pick up a free ticket, or if you're watching Simpsons on a local Fox affiliate, you can text in and get a free ticket, and you will have to cover the debut of Spider-Man.
I think I'll pass.
Oh, well, there, you just give me a freaking for the next podcast.
One of the things on WWE On Demand, they're showing stuff from the Attitude Era.
Mm-hmm.
I forgot how many damn monster trucks were involved in wrestling back then.
Oh.
You had Stone Cold Steve Austin taking his Stone Cold monster truck and running over the Rock's car. You had Hogan in his monster truck versus the Giant in his monster truck on the roof of the arena, where Hogan's monster truck knocked the Giant's monster truck off the arena, where it fell to the ground. And 10 minutes later, the Giant, who was driving his monster truck, perfectly fine, comes in and wrestles. I don't know, Joe. If I was in a truck that was knocked off the roof of a building, I might need a day or two to recover.
Yeah.
But not in the magic world of WCW.
Oh, he was a giant. Is. Now he's the Big Show. Remember when he first showed up, they advertised him as being Andre's son.
Yeah.
During one of the NWO bits, they had Hall looked at, hey, man, didn't you used to be Andre's son? And Giant's like, don't go there. That was live. Fun stuff.
You want to be freaked out, watch some early Big Show in WCW.
Oh, and he was like 23, wasn't he, or 25, or he was young.
And the guy was in shape.
Oh, he could throw drop kicks.
He was doing moonsaults.
He even talks about it. You know, he talks about, you know, he is probably the biggest guy in wrestling that can put on a show to knock the Great Khali. Or Haystack Calhoun. But he talks about one of the things, you know, people are like, well, you're the Giant. Why do you get knocked over so much? And he says the big thing is when he's in the ring now, it's his job to tell the story. Because that's essentially what wrestling is. You know, you got to be able to tell the story while you're, you know, swinging chairs and punches at each other. And he says if you can't knock the Giant over, what's the point of having the Giant? He says, plus he hears when... Since he's playing the bad guy now, when he does get knocked over or he does get picked up in a scoop slam or a body slam, he says the reaction is the payoff for him, you know, just to know that people are in and invested in the story they're telling in the ring, which has got to be more interesting than just dead silence.
Well, you know why he quit doing the drop kicks and the moonsaults and the stuff like that? He was in WCW doing that stuff. And Hogan, he and Hogan were pretty close friends. And Hogan said, dude, you don't have to do that. Why are you working so hard? You're getting paid millions of dollars. Just go out there, chop, chop, kick, kick, you're done. And he just took it to heart to the point where when he first came into the WWF, if you remember, they had him wearing a girdle because he had put on so much weight. He was the tubby show. They sent him to get liposuction, and he put all the weight back on. So they punished him by sending him down to developmental for, what, almost a year.
Yeah.
And you watch, he does a decent match, but he's not leaving his feet for any reason. The arms no longer have a lot of muscle to them. You know, used to be, he'd come to the ring, guy had biceps, triceps, you know, was built. Now, well, he's just big. So, there's another guy Hogan ruined.
Yeah, but it's a big show. He's entertaining now.
You know, of course, for him, let's be honest, how long has he been in the business? Almost 20 years.
Yeah. How many other people have had their career cut short because their body just can't take the high flyer? I actually have a couple tapes I found. I picked them at a garage sale. They're VHS tapes, and I watched them. And I was shocked just how violent the Attitude Era is. I
mean, oh, yeah.
The headshots, the moves these guys took. I mean, it's I don't remember it being that violent, but like some of the guys on PW Insider said, they've been over the last 10 years slowly toning it back so that, because they realize a lot of these guys' careers were cut short. You know, for every Rock, for every Ric Flair, for better or worse, not financial side, but, you know, body-wise, Ric Flair can still get in there and throw himself around if he wants to. You got guys like Edge, Stone Cold Steve Austin, that have the neck injury where it's, you know, one false move and you're paralyzed forever. So they gradually over time, you know, throttled back on it. Now I watch the Attitude Era tapes and I'm just shocked, you know.
And you're probably not even watching ECW.
No, these are just WWE ones that I found, you know. So.
Because last week on WWE On Demand, they're showing the ECW stuff in order, and they're up to, like, 2008. And it's, we're going to show a match from about a year ago, and it was Fonzie, who was a referee turned manager, versus Beulah McGillicuddy. And, of course, she beats the crap out of him, cuts his forehead, et cetera, et cetera. And when they would have gone to commercial, instead they go to Joey Styles, who talks about the behind-the-scenes stuff. And he said, you could talk about the Dudleys and Sandman and Raven and New Jack, but the match you just saw was the bloodiest match in ECW history. To the point where, after the match, they had to take Fonzie to the ER to get a blood transfusion. He had lost that much blood.
Was the match that long, or did he just cut himself deeper than he probably should have?
He cut himself deep early, and Mike Johnson on PW Insider, who we give free plugs to even though they don't buy ads, we're such bad business people, answered my question on it, and he said what it was, Fonzie was about to get fired. He was part of a group that was, you know, petitioning, you know, kind of trying to go to WCW. And he got found out, and WCW didn't want him. So he had this match, and in it he just bled and bled and bled, because he thought, correctly, you know, if I do this to my body for this company, they really can't fire me. And he was right, because he was with them till the last day. But you watch the match, and you do about halfway through start going, oh, please stop this. This guy's in bad shape. But then again, you got guys like New Jack. New Jack's still wrestling. He doesn't know a wrist lock from a master lock from a combination lock. He still goes in, looks for the highest thing in the building that he can jump off of. And, okay, that's how I do my match.
Gotta love this. I know we're in the middle of geeking and freaking, I know.
Well, you know, yeah, but I was going to do my freaking, which is a non-comic freaking.
Well, actually, I have one more just to mention, and it just has to do with it just didn't turn out right. Over New Year's, I went with my family. We went up to the North Shore to just spend some time, and there's one comic book store in Duluth, Minnesota called Collecting Connections. I don't know who currently owns it. Back when Pat and I used to do comic book shows, they'd have a Duluth show up there. And got to know the guy. He used to come down to the MCBA shows. We'd see him at Greenberg Show. So naturally, I say, well, we'll go up Sunday. So we went up Sunday. We came back New Year's because Holly had to go to school the next day. So I figured, okay, I'm going to stop by Collecting Connection. And, you know, just they moved from their mall location to a new location. And other than when they had a hellacious rainstorm a couple of years ago that they said they flooded their parking lot to where it was like up to their knees, but it didn't get in their store. I haven't actually been in the store, so I was kind of excited to do that. And we were able to find it real easy. However, they don't have hours on Sunday. You know, and then they were also closed New Year's Day and closed the Monday beforehand. And I kept thinking, you know, I know some small shops, especially like Crazy Comics, we used to close Monday, Tuesday, but man, close 3 days in a row? Wow. So I can't give you a review of visiting Collecting Connection. It'll happen sometime because I do go to Duluth a lot. It's just a matter of time. Locally, when I got back in town, I was off last Friday, so I decided to go visit a little die-cast shop I know up in Coon Rapids near Outpost 2000. Gone. Somewhere between when I saw them a year or so ago and now, they just left. They have left the building.
Oh.
The train shop next to them is gone. The one thing that did change was Outpost 2000. They actually moved from their one location over into the same mall that these guys were. We're not the same spot. We went into Outpost 2000, my daughter and I were just out geeking around. And if you're a comic collector, in my humble opinion, you do not need to go to Outpost 2000. They don't have much in terms of comics.
Really?
A lot of boxes, dollar boxes. You can go through and dig through get some stuff. They probably carry new stuff, just enough to sell out. They might have subscriptions. I will say, though, if you're up in that area and you're looking for a place to do some hardcore gaming, that would be your place to
go. Okay.
Because 90% of the shop is gaming, very little of it's comics. So I was kind of surprised and a little bit disappointed. Last time I was there, they actually had a decent run of some mid-size Marvels, and they were priced good. And so I'm not surprised that they weren't there. But, they're not the store for me. So no die-cast, no train shop, nothing there. So I made it up to myself. We hit the source. Can't go wrong by hitting the source. So that was kind of a freak, you know, not able to get to the one store because of odd hours and going to another store and seeing that it changed. It's good that they're still open and you got to work with what works with you. But for me, it didn't work. It just didn't work. Corey. I got to put a little vodka in that. So what you freaking on?
One of the shows that I really enjoyed this season ends with its 13th episode.
Hmm.
The Last Resort, which was written and run by the creator of The Shield, which may be my favorite cop show of all time. Well, Homicide: Life on the Street may be my favorite cop show of all time. They're both great.
I thought it was Cop Rock.
Get out.
Sorry.
Last Resort was a serialized drama. The pilot movie was phenomenal. And there's a lot of, I wondered why they didn't just do it as a theatrical movie, because when the pilot was over, I said, that was great. I have no idea how they're going to make a series out of it. And they did develop what it was. It was a U.S. nuclear submarine bringing back some Navy SEALs from a secret mission in Pakistan, is ordered via ancient communication channels to fire missiles into, I think it was Pakistan, fire its nuclear missiles into Pakistan. And the captain of the ship questions the orders because it comes through this antiquated communication system, not the current modern system. And immediately, the submarine is targeted by the U.S. Navy for destruction. So they go to a neutral island, which of course has all sorts of stuff going on it. Not the Lost Island, but more, this is an island with the U.N. listening post.
Oh, Gilligan's Island.
Bunch of drug dealers and some natives there.
Fantasy.
And it's a standoff between this nuclear submarine and the U.S. military. And, you know, there's political maneuvering. It was really, really well done. They were able to get a lot out of the premise. Now, the good thing is, unlike most serialized TV shows, they told them, hey, we're not going to pick you up for the back nine, so you might want to wrap up your story early enough that they are able to wrap up the story. But
which
still,
oh,
I can't tell you how many serialized series that I watched and, no ending, sorry.
Oh, yeah.
But this one has an ending, and while I'm glad it's having an ending, kind of freaking that it's going away. I'm also freaking that I did so much overtime that this weekend my sleep schedule is just completely buggered. I was thinking, you know what? Reset my schedule Thursday. I could get stuff done Friday and Saturday and Sunday. And no, I've been up till like 3-4 in the morning. And then finally, okay, I think I'm tired. And I really don't go to sleep till around 7. And then through the day, I'm just kind of fuzzy and half awake. But it looks like I'm going to have my regular schedule
for a
number of reasons. However, you know how I said, oh, they finally hired two overnight people? Yeah, one of them quit already.
You know, you should post. There's got to be some of our listeners out there that could use a decent overnight job.
You know, I have posted this on Twitter and Facebook and other places. First off, it's out in Victoria, Minnesota, which if you live in Minneapolis, you go, oh, my God, that's a 45-minute drive. And the pay is terrible. Mm. There are fast food restaurants that are paying better. So, if you're interested in an overnight job in Victoria, Minnesota, guess what? There's no short-term disability, no long-term disability, no dental. Let me know.
Sure.
So, Joe, what are you geeking on? What makes you happy?
You know, I've geeked about this over and over, but I think one of my all-time favorite series is Love and Capes. And I've geeked about it before. I'll try not to go too much into it. And especially this one, because this one's got some good, good spoilers in it. But the series on this one is Love and Capes, What to Expect, number 6. And essentially the Superman, Lois Lane figures, for better, or archetypes. You know, they're married and they're having a baby. And I keep thinking, this is how you could do this in a regular funny book. You need to get a guy like Zahler who knows how to do this. We talked about it before. You know, he's writing it in a comic strip format. He's writing it as if it was a sitcom.
Oh, and issue
I
five
see this as
just
a sitcom,
pure
which is really
sitcom.
Cool.
Issue oh. 5 was pure sitcom where they switch brains.
Yep. And of course, there's my favorite panel, of course. course, is the sister who knows all the secrets comes to the door and knocks on the door. And as they open it, they're busy putting the clothes on. And she's like, no, you didn't. Well, ew. And that's all they mention. Because you know damn well, if I switched bodies with my wife, the first thing I'd be doing it, well, we want to keep this a PG, so I'll let you guys just Google some pictures. But, I mean, it's just, it would happen, you know. And being that it never will happen, it's just a fantasy. And anybody who says otherwise is a damn liar. Anyways, number six is out. It's got a couple amazing spoilers. The first one, of course, boy or girl. But even on the cover, it says, yeah, right. Like we're going to tell you on the cover, take it inside, Buster. my assumption is this is the last issue of this story arc and that hopefully we'll see another. I'm pretty sure we'll see another story arc. So that should be fun.
Well, and even if they don't print it as a comic, it's up online.
It is?
Yeah, it's an online book strip
coming up. Yeah. So it's just fabulous. And in case you haven't noticed, Mars is attacking again.
Yes.
And the first one is he attacks, and I mean, I don't know why the hell they would do this, but they attacked Popeye. Which was really maybe they have to be that dumb because as you and I know, if there's a top 10 list of people you do not physically assault, I'm pretty sure Popeye would be on the list somewhere, even without spinach. So the first issue came out. It was done by frequent MCBA guest Terry Beatty, and it was fabulous. Absolutely loved it. Another thing that is unfortunate is that they have a number of variant covers which are being done by people who don't normally do comics or are not currently doing comics. Who did Bloom County? Breathed Berkeley or however you pronounce his name?
Breathed.
Thank you. He did a wonderful Opus as an Alien cover.
How fun!
$25-$30 on eBay if you can find it. Nobody in town had it, which means whatever the level of you needed to buy, they didn't do. For the next one that came out, Mars Attacks Kiss, just came out this week. I was less excited about this one after reading it because I don't read the regular Kiss comics, so I guess I don't know what the mythology is behind it. Some of it ties into the old Marvel Comics one, like the Dizzy the Hun. He was the diaper bald man that ran around with the box that had the things inside it that turned whoever into Kiss. So I was kind of pleased to see him there because we actually saw him way back when Kiss made their first debut. So for me...
Can you tell just from that description that was a Steve Gerber idea?
That would make sense now. Again, if you like Kiss, this is probably fun. If you read the comics, it was fun. And it wasn't a bad diversion. The variant covers this month are Mars Attacks Star Slammers with, obviously Walt Simonson doing the cover, and then Mars Attacks Judge Dredd by Greg Staples. Again, nobody in town that I know of has these covers, so whatever the requirement are for the retailer incentive, it's way too high. Looking forward, the only other one that's coming that I really get excited about, we've got Mars Attacks, The Real Ghostbusters, which is supposed to be out next week, which should be fun. Mars Attacks, The Transformers, which I will get into. And then finally, Mars Attacks, Zombies versus Robots, which seems like a bad idea to get in the middle of a war anyways. But you know, they're Martians. They're pretty stupid anyways. The variant covers that I look fun. There's a Mars Attacks Madman, a Mars Attacks Strangers in Paradise, and the one that I have no doubt I will probably not find cheap, Mars Attacks Cerebus.
So, oh, wow.
If you pick up an issue of Mars Attacks, you look to the back page, you can see all the covers. So if you just want to see the covers, it's kind of fun. So kind of a goofy idea, sort of fun. It kind of reminds me of... the issue of Lost... Love and Capes, getting back to that again. Did I tell you I love and Capes? but love and it? But they had in one of the issues of the current series, they had a thing where they did an infestation. If you remember, that was last year. They had a bunch of zombies attacking all the different titles, which seems to be IDW's motif, where they can get a decent crossover out of licensed titles without having an actual crossover. But the two heroes were just talking about a zombie fight that they just finished that they didn't like. But the one guy was saying, well, I did like the guy who was wearing the fez and the bow tie. He said, and if you're a Doctor Who fan, you got that reference right away. So that was kind of
now.
A cute little crossover.
Fezzes are cool.
Fezzes are cool. Bow ties are cool. My rheumatoid arthritis doctor used to wear a bow tie, and I keep telling him, I like you better when you wear the bow tie. Bow ties are cool. Last thing for freaking and geeking, for me, and I don't know if this will be a geek or a freak, but if I'm in town, and I'm betting money I won't be, I'll get to go to Fabletown and Beyond, which is an epic convention celebrating mythic comic books. It'll be in Rochester, Minnesota, March 22nd and 24th, down at the Mayo Civic Center. And already there's the hootenanny of people going there. And the only thing, hootenanny, go to www.fablescon.com. Check it out. And then, of course, a couple months later will be the MCBA Spring Con comic book carnival. Not just a celebration. It's going to be a carnival. May 18th and 19th, mark it down. 25 years they've been doing this, and it's at the Minnesota State Fairgrounds. I was told this con's getting so big it might outgrow the grandstand. I don't know where it's going to go if it can't be in the grandstand, but again,
the Metro Dome.
Yeah, no, they're tearing that baby down for a new one, but there are other places. We'll see what happens, but you can see too, May 18th, 19th, Corey and I will be there working the charity art booth. Well, more of a rummage sale / art. If you got anything to donate, start putting it in bags and bringing it.
And I will probably wear pants.
Well, you are the best dressed man in comics. There's been times where I will argue otherwise, especially when Greg Ketter's there, because we all know he's a damn fine, handsome man. So
he's a handsome man, but I'm better dressed.
Well, he's damn handsome. There's a difference.
I don't claim to be
MidwestComicBook.com. You can also check out their Facebook pages, just like we have a Facebook page. So
which was mentioned in the recorded thing.
I'm geeking. The last geek I have, and this will be an ongoing geek because you guys will get to share the progress. I did pick up a 2010 comic priceless guide, even though I couldn't find a 2013 anymore. So my year... this year, I will be working to get my graphic novels and comics in order, and I'm also going to use our wonderful web host to get my own website, because I am nobody without a website.
And that's right.
I want to set it up where I can, you know, I'll probably use eBay to tease people into my website and then have an actual website where I can sell some of the cooler things I have. Because even as I look around, I got lots of cool things, and not everything I get to keep, because some of it I don't want to keep. So I'm geeking about that. I'm getting in my information phase now, where I'm just gathering information, because I don't want just a website. I want to be able to sell things, so you can go and buy it and PayPal it, and then I'll come up the next morning and go, hey, one of our listeners bought something, and I'll give them free shipping because of it. Except you, Corey, you pay double.
Don't I have to come over and pick it up during the hour between the hours of 3 and 4 on alternate Thursdays?
How many times do I tell you? Alternate leap years.
Oh, okay.
Yeah. If you didn't scare the guinea pig so badly, I'd let you in more often, but that's just the way it goes.
I only have two.
What are you geeking on?
I only have two geekings.
Left and right hand?
Nope. The first one is, have you heard who's going to be penciling some issues of Indestructible Hulk?
No.
Walt Simonson.
Ooh.
Have you heard who the guest star in those issues? Have you heard who the guest star in those issues of Indestructible Hulk is going to be?
I would say either
Thor.
Or Thor, yeah.
And I love how Mark Waid announced it. He said, yo, I got Walt Simonson to draw some issues. Now, if Walt Simonson's going to draw your comic at Marvel, you're going to put Thor in it because you want to see Walt Simonson draw Thor again. So, yeah, those issues can't come out fast enough.
Sweet.
I recently reread the Walt Simonson issues of The Avengers with Thor. Mm. Marvel, please take a dump truck of money to his house and have Walt Simonson do Thor again. Please, please. Walt Simonson on any Kirby character is amazing. I even, I can count on one hand and still have enough fingers left to wave at people. The number of people besides Kirby who I think have done a good job on the New Gods, Walt Simon's one of them. I can reread his issues of Orion and the New Gods, and every time it's fun. So I'm so glad that Walt Simonson is doing comics again. He's doing Marvel comics. He's doing Thor.
Those are one of the books I gave my daughter to read because, you know, she's getting into the graphic novel thing. And I said, just the whole run of Thor in that he did, you know, I think it's 4 or 5 volumes.
Yeah.
I don't know because she has them at the moment. The only other guy I know that does God's good was when Neil Gaiman was starting off in Sandman and they let him play around a little bit in the DC universe. And even towards the end of the run, they let him play around a little bit in the DC universe just because he recognizes that superheroes are the modern mythology and, you know, you can tie them in without having one overpower the other. Now I want to read those.
The second thing I'm geeking on, I got to give a little background on. When Barack Obama became president of this here United States, he put a thing in place on the White House webpage where if you put in a petition and it gets a certain number of signatures, the White House will officially respond to that petition. Someone put in a petition to build a Death Star, and it gathered enough signatures that the White House put out an official response, and I'm just going to read parts of it. Official White House response to secure resources and funding and begin construction of a Death Star in 2016. The headline of the response is, "This is not the petition response you're looking for." The administration shares your desire for job creation and a strong national defense, but a Death Star isn't on the horizon. Here are a few reasons. 1. The construction of a Death Star has been estimated to cost $850 quadrillion. We're working hard to reduce the deficit, not expand it. Number 2, the administration does not support blowing up planets.
Wimps.
Number 3, why would we spend countless taxpayer dollars on a Death Star with a fundamental flaw that can be exploited by a one-man starship?
Although, if you did catch the update that happened, Darth Vader himself tweeted a response. A serious mistake, Mr. President. You can never have enough planet-sized lasers.
Now, here's some of the other stuff that I like. We don't have a Death Star, but we do have floating robot assassins. A president who knows his way around a lightsaber and an advanced marshmallow cannon, and the Defense Advanced Research Project Agency, which is supporting research on building Luke's arm, floating droids, and quadruped walkers. We are living in the future. Enjoy it. Or better yet, build it by pursuing a career in science, technology, engineering, or a math-related field. If you do pursue a career in science, technology, or a math-related field, the Force will be with us. Remember, the Death Star's power to destroy a planet or even a whole star system is insignificant next to the power of the Force.
Although there is a Death Star PR department on Twitter that says, until you put the laser and the space station together and start blowing up planets, you're not doing enough science.
Shall I give a tease for our next episode, Joe?
Well, since I'm gone next week, what are you going to do?
Well, first off, the first episode of the solo podcast, Solitaire Rose Radio, will be up in a day or two. It is recorded. Ooh. Today I picked out what the theme song is going to be. And believe it or not, I talked for like an hour and 15 minutes, so I don't need you to be a windbag. But I hold in my hand...
Oh, you promised you weren't going to do that anymore.
The top 500 graphic novels of 2012 and the top 500 selling comics of 2012. And I thought it would be fun for us to go through it. I'm going to give a preview. The top 10 graphic novels, 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7. 7 of the top 10.
Walking Dead. Selling.
Yeah, Walking Dead.
So we're already 20, one-fifth of the way through it. Or is it
1/50th? 11, 100? 12, 13 of the top 20 are Walking Dead.
Where's Watchmen?
Watchmen is number 14.
Okay, so see, we've already got 14 spots covered. We're already well on our way to that magical top countdown number at 500. We should have done like Casey Kasem and started number 500, work our way down.
Oh, let's see what is at 500. Number 500 is Brightest Day, Volume 1.
Cool.
Top 500 comics. Number one comic of the year, Joe. Best-selling comic of the year.
Defender?
No.
You can tell I'm not taking this serious.
Walking Dead 100.
Oh, even without the variants, probably.
In the top 10, 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6 of the top 10 are Avengers versus X-Men. For all the talk about DC doing their reboot, you have to go all the way down to number 17 for Batman, number 13 in the top 500. Out of the top 20, Marvel has 18 of them.
I'm Batman.
And number 500 is World's Finest Number Zero.
I don't recall if I read that. Oh, wait a minute. Yeah, that was the issue that explains how they got to where they're going.
Yep. So I thought you and I could look that over while you're in Washington, D.C., hanging out, playing with celebrities.
The problem is
taxpayer money.
I won't have time to do the podcast.
Planning on taking everybody's guns.
I'm not going to have, no, we don't take guns. We just take bullets. Didn't you hear the latest rumors? TSA's buying up all the hollow point bullets.
Yeah, that's from my brother-in-law who.
Yeah.
He's the one who says that the government, the government, they want to get me. So I got to have guns to protect myself from the government. Mm-hmm. And no, anybody who says, I need guns to protect myself from the government, is too stupid to live. The government has a military. That military has tanks, grenades, missiles, laws rockets, flying killer robots that rain death from the sky. The most advanced military on the planet. I think if the government wants to get rid of somebody, they can do it.
Yeah.
I'm going to shoot my rifle at them.
Yeah. Oh, what's that plane up there? F-6, oh, B-52? No. We here at Crazy Comics do not mind if you bring your guns to the podcast.
Now, here's my thing on it. I don't have a gun. You know why?
You can barely afford comic books.
If there's a zombie apocalypse, you don't want guns. Guns are like ringing a dinner bell.
Yeah.
I have a machete.
One guy who's lethal and stealthy with a crossbow happens to jump on his motorbike whenever he escapes. On the other hand, sometimes you just got to watch the barn burn.
So, I explained a little bit on the podcast going up either tomorrow or the next day that solo podcast is going to be different. First project I have is a kind of a history of Jack Kirby for people who don't know who Jack Kirby is. I'm lining up some interviews, and then I'm going to start a big project. Are you ready for the big project, Joe?
You're not going to clean Sharon's room, are you?
Oh, hell no. That's not my job. That's why you buy flamethrowers.
Oh, okay.
No, I am going to do a history of EC Comics, including a separate podcast on each series they did. So there'll be a series on Tales from the Crypt. There'll be a podcast on Weird Fantasy. There'll be a podcast on Mad. There'll be a podcast on Shock Suspense Stories. I don't think I'm going to do pre-trend and post-trend so much as just kind of gloss over them, because the pre-trend stuff, yeah, it's really, really bad. It's really bad.
How bad is it?
The Atlas stuff at the time was like light years better. And the post-trend stuff is kind of weird. You know, let me give you some of the titles of the post-trend DC books. MD, Stories of Doctors. Psychoanalysis. Joe, do you want to read a comic from the 50s about people going through psychoanalysis?
I think I'd rather read another Deathmate.
Well, nobody else wanted to read it either. God, what was the other one? There was Piracy, which wasn't half horrible. But really, the post-trend EC books were just, you could tell they were scrambling. What can we do that won't offend anybody? So that's kind of what's coming up with me for you and I on our next podcast. Why don't we go over the top 500 books?
Well, it'll have to be in a couple weeks, because when I'm in Washington, I won't have time to podcast, unfortunately.
Yeah, that's what you say now. You're going to clean out the mini bar and pass out, aren't you?
Damn straight.
You and those macadamia nuts. You know, macadamia nuts, you only eat them when they come out of the mini bar. Nobody buys macadamia nuts and eats them.
I feel that same way about cachous.
I don't even know what a cachou is.
Oh,
God!
I think we're all near the end of the podcast.
I think so. And if cachous make you do that, I know I don't want any.
They're almost as good as circus peanuts.
Hey,
or that orange,
don't be down on circus peanuts.
Or that orange Kool-Aid you can buy at Target.
I remember as a kid, my mom would buy a bag of circus peanuts, and I would always be happy until she said she was going to turn it into the salad. And then it would come out as this gooey tapioca thing. And it was always sad because I loved eating circus peanuts. Why do you take the circus peanuts and turn them into crap? I'm still traumatized. Well, believe it or not, kids.
Of course.
Oh, if only we could do sound drops. I'd have the Marlon Brando from Apocalypse Now.
Of course.
Believe it or not, kids, you've wasted an hour and a half of your life listening to us blather on about funny books. And we haven't been interrupted by a guinea pig yet.
No. Or the crickets. They're still alive, right?
I don't know. They only come out when you tell a bad joke. Although WrestleCraft Radio has restarted, so they may have defected and gone back.
Oh, well, that's okay. We just want to...
I haven't listened to the return, But for all I know, they defected. They left us. Bastards. Damn. And while Joe's typing in addresses of porn sites.
No, I'm just putting up on our official Crazy Comics and Stuff page that we just finished another podcast and Corey did a solo one too. Solo, you can't hear it.
Hey! The crickets are back.
I was worried.
So, as we say every week, the comic we like the least, we still like better than the comic you like the most. Joe?
It's time to dance! Somebody hit my music!
Funk is on a roll! Funk is on a roll!
Hey, yeah!